Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here. We're going to do another installment of our Two Seed Line in the New Testament series. And tonight we're going to be focusing primarily on Matthew chapter 13, which contains the parable of the wheat and the tares. Another major chapter in the Bible, such as Matthew 23 and John 8, and we'll discover a few more in this series, that mainstream Judeo-Christianity totally ignores. And I wonder why that is, Bill.
Well, they can't get past that Sermon on the Mount. They've been teaching that for 1,000 years, and they just can't.
Yeah, they just can't. Matthew 5, and you know they universalize the heck out of it, and but they don't want to talk about tares, do they?
They ignore Matthew 13 and ignore Matthew 23. But I mean, they don't want to talk about the tares at all. It's all spiritual to them.
Yeah,
and it's not, you know. I don't know how spirits are sown, but Paul says that spirits. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 that we are sown a physical seed.
Yes.
That's a sperma.
Right.
And raised a spiritual seed.
Oh, okay.
In other words, if you're not the correct sort of seed sown at the beginning, you're not going to have that spirit.
But didn't that happen at the cross?
No, that happened at the copulation of your mother and your father. And
there you go.
And that's the damn truth. That's the word of sperma.
Yeah.
It can't get any clearer, and I hate to be vulgar,
it's
plain.
I've never heard of spiritual sperm.
No, and Clifton wrote an essay, Spiritual Sperm.
Oh, he did.
There is no such thing as spiritual sperm.
Yeah. Okay, Joel Mayer says he has... something about the rabbi selling organs. Well, Joel, if you want to call in, feel free to do so. You know, we'll recognize you if it's something you want to share with us on the air. Otherwise, I can call you, after the show or vice versa. Okay.
Well, it's obvious that the Catholic Church is literally built on the bones of the saints.
That's right.
I mean, St. Peter's Basilica. I have it on my website. I have the evidence. St. Peter's Basilica is built over an ancient Christian graveyard.
Uh-huh.
And it's literally resting on the bones of the saints.
Right, right. Okay, actually, come to think of it.
And what I'm about to say is that the Jews, that while the church has their bones, the Jews make money from their body parts.
Right, exactly. And the Catholics turn them into relics for sale.
Yeah.
Okay, Joel, in order to call in, the call-in number is 724-444-7444. And if you're not a member, you have to wait for the machine operator, the cyber operator to cue you. And but punch in 30258 #, and that should bring you up on my screen. Sometimes if you can't do that, then it gives you the option to call in as a guest. And I think it's just a matter of hitting the #, without the code. So just follow the instructions of the cyber secretary that answers the phone. I see Maui. Hello? For some reason, I got a real long delay factor between recognizing, clicking on the... There we go. Pat, is that you?
Yeah, it's me, Eli. How are you doing?
Good. You have a question or comment, or you just...
Oh, no, I'm just listening. I'm in the car, so I'll log in when I get back. So.
Okay, all right. I'll
go ahead and...
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so, a lot of people just call to listen. If they're not on their computer, they can listen by telephone and by iPod, et cetera, et cetera. The wonders of, the electronics of this final age.
and I would like to say something too about that.
Okay.
Because a lot of the listeners, they have complaints from time to time about TalkShoe, and we all wish our technology could work perfectly.
Uh-huh.
And it just doesn't sometimes, and that's the way it is.
Right.
But I was on I got a late night email last night from prothink.org from Mike Delaney.
Okay.
And it was a mailing list email. It was nothing special. And he was making an announcement that he was appearing on your old network, Blog Talk Radio.
Right. Okay.
So I hit the link, and it brings up Internet Explorer, and Internet Explorer tries to load Blog Talk Radio and it crashes. So I bring up Opera, which is another web browser, and that just hung.
Okay.
And it hung and hung and hung. And I bring up Firefox, which is another web browser.
Yes.
And that just hung. And I tried for like 15, 20 minutes to get into Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
I couldn't even get in.
All right.
And my browsers were either hanging or crashing.
Yes.
So,
okay,
so,
yeah,
I wouldn't cry too much about TalkShoe.
Right, yeah, well, and Joy says it's free, so don't look a gift horse in the mouth, right?
Well, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true also. But what I'm saying is that, you know, those other networks, they have their problems.
Yes. Okay. Well, we have Joel on the line. How are you doing, Joel?
Very good, thank you.
So you had a comment about the rabbi selling body parts.
Yes, I'd like to link up on that. I think that's that was a very prescient observation of yours, and I want to go two directions with that.
Okay.
First off, I want to mention that Wednesday evening, David Letterman actually commented on the same thing.
Wow.
That's right, exclamation point. He actually had enough courage on Wednesday night to make a remark about rabbis in New Jersey selling organ parts. He was a little, you know, he has to be, he's not an identity minister, so he can't really lay things on the line. But
yeah.
I was still thrilled. I stood up and I applauded and cheered. Said, my God, you know, the mainstream, somebody in the mainstream is telling the truth.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, I guess what's happening is the Jewish perfidy is becoming so blatant and commonplace that it's now visible for all to see. Isn't that one? I think that's one of the marks we're going to visit tonight in chapter 13 of Matthew, that, you know, that's everywhere. You know, it's becoming apparent, you know, as the tares raise their black heads, which I perceive as the fedoras of the rabbis, and their black beards. These are the tares.
You know, there's also a parable of the fig tree, you know, and Yahshua Christ talking about the time of the end. You know, he's referring back not to the good fig trees of Israel, but to the fig tree that he cursed.
That's right.
And
okay, well, wait. I want to explain something before you guys get into the real meat of the sermon.
Sure.
I want to explain something that happened in 1933, and let me tell you how this bugs me.
Okay.
Every time I turn on the TV, I'm listening to a Jewish person.
Yeah.
They always insist that Joseph Mengele molested and murdered Jewish children.
Okay.
Right? You've all heard that.
Take their own crimes and they always accuse the white people of them.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for saying that. Thank you. Now let me give you the lead-in. What I want to explain is a Jewish crime that took place in the city of Lübeck, Germany in 1933. And this is only going to take about 3 minutes.
Okay.
So just be patient now. All right. This is a crime committed by Jews in 1933. And basically what happened, either in 1855 or in 1814, the Jews were expelled from the city of Lübeck, Germany.
Okay.
And the mayor just wrote an edict and he said, I'm sorry, we're all through with you people. We don't want you in Lübeck anymore. And they were actually formally excluded.
Mm-hmm.
So they left, and then what happened? Then something strange happened. In the early years of the 20th century, the Jews got complete control of Germany, particularly the medical profession. And in 1931, there were some Jewish pediatricians who were working for the German Civil Service Commission, and they went into Lübeck and they began vaccinating all the children in Lübeck, Germany. Okay. Now what happened is 81 children died.
Yes.
Following this episode of vaccination. So the word got through town that this was happening to these children. Now, try to keep in mind, since the Jews were kicked out in the 1800s, there was no chance whatsoever that a Jewish child could have been vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
So these people went into Lübeck. They went into Lübeck specifically because they knew that there were no Jewish children living there.
Right.
So when these kids started to die, the families, the parents were talking, and they said, something's going on because all our children, you know, they were all vaccinated against tuberculosis by the public health doctors.
Yes.
So they went to the public health doctors, and they said, you vaccinated our children against tuberculosis. How could they be dying?
Yes.
Now, let me tell you what the Jewish doctors said without even missing a breath. They said, we had to have a positive control.
Huh.
So it turns out that what they did, they injected some of the children with an extremely virulent strain of the tuberculosis organism. In other words, some kids they vaccinated and some kids they actually intentionally gave the infection
right.
to. And it ended up with 81 children dying.
Hmm.
You know, I'd like to say a few things right here. If I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to do it while the idea is fresh. And the problem is not the Jews. I'm sorry, it's not. The problem is the Christians, all right? It's the parable of the unrighteous steward. The unrighteous steward acted unrighteously because he was a kike, and he was expected to act unrighteously.
Yeah.
Wolves eat sheep.
Right.
That's what they do. Christians have no business trusting a Jew. Their religion has not changed since they killed Christ. And when a Christian trusts a Jew, he deserves to get eaten.
Yeah. Well, I think what Joel is pointing out here is that these Christians were simply caught unaware by
I mean, they're Jewish doctors. Come on. You don't bring your kid to a Jew.
Right. This was a state-sponsored program, right, Joel?
Yes. What happened is, after the Jews realized that explanation wouldn't fly, mm-hmm. that they had to have a positive control, then the Jews claimed that the labels slipped off the vials and they mixed up. Yeah, isn't that a good one?
Same thing today over and over. They just have maybe they have more sophisticated excuses. I'm sorry.
Wait,
go ahead.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's right. So you're right. Nothing has changed. Jonas Salk was the same way.
Right.
So these kids died. Now, they made a movie out of this, and I thought, Pastor James, you might remember this because living in Chicago, WGN was always showing these old black and white films.
Right.
So let me remind you about this movie. This movie starred the Jew Paul Muni and Barry Fitzgerald, and it was about a dedicated doctor who had to go to an island in the Caribbean and do a scientific experiment on black people.
Uh-huh.
And the movie's been, all the prints of it have been made to disappear.
Right.
So you won't, I can't remember what the name of it.
The Island of Dr. Moreau. Just
kidding. Well, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Okay, now there's more. So they made a movie out of it, and I remember seeing that as a kid. I can't find any evidence about it. I've looked up the film credits, Paul Muni and Barry Fitzgerald. It's been made to disappear.
Really?
Now let me tell you what else the Jews did. See, the Jews had their feelings hurt. So let me tell you what the Jews did on Palm Sunday in the Second World War on the 29th of March in 1942. They carpet bombed Lübeck, Germany.
Okay.
And
Lübeck
was a port town, there was no military value.
Mm-hmm.
But they killed,
like Dresden, yeah.
They killed 301 civilians and 783 casualties. Mm-hmm. So this got to the point where the Jews were saying basically, how dare the German people take umbrage at our slaughtering their children.
Right.
Now, let me get into Joseph Mengele now.
Okay.
The issue with Mengele is that after this horrible Lübeck City experiment, the German people passed a law in 1935. It was settled rules called the Nuremberg Regulations. And one of the Nuremberg laws said no human experimentation without prior animal experimentation.
Mm.
They didn't even mention what the Jews had done,
right.
But they said this in the Nuremberg laws. There's no more human experimentation in Germany that can be done in a casual way. There has to be animal studies. There has to be all sorts of public notifications. Now, another side of the Nuremberg laws, to give you an idea how sick Jews are, they also had a rule that said that no Jew could have a female housekeeper younger than 45 years of age. Okay, so in other words, by 1935, the Germans completely woke up and they said, my God, these Jews are uncontrollable.
They're evil.
Wild.
Yeah, they're just plain evil. Right, right. Well, do you think, real quick, that the reason why the Jews staged the Nuremberg trials in Nuremberg was because more retribution for these Nuremberg laws?
That's right. They rubbed our noses in it.
Yes.
They basically, they rubbed, Hitler got France to surrender. He demanded a surrender from France on the same railroad car that he, that the German people had surrendered at the end of the First World War.
All right.
So the tit for tat kind of thing, yes, you're exactly correct.
But that shows
German
that,
were,
yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Bill.
That just shows that Adolf Hitler stands out in that he's a white man that knows his history.
Yeah,
and most
sure.
white people don't know their history.
Right. Well, we're
and
not
that's
taught.
Why the Jews are able to do what they do.
Yeah, right. And the Jews know history, and we don't.
Right, absolutely.
Exactly. Okay, Joel, any more about Nuremberg and the Jews trying to, you know, vaccinate us to death? Because, you know, I know that what they want to do is in September, at the beginning of the school year, they want to start vaccinating all our children again.
Well, first, let me tell you, I have another prepared essay on the horrors of the Salk vaccine, but it's too much for tonight. I just wanted to get in and just remind people what my area is.
Right.
If you want to check my story about the Lubeck experiment, there's a book called The Blood Poisoners.
All right.
It was written by somebody whose last name is Dole, and the first, I don't have a first name, but the first initial is L.
Well,
and
I tell
it's
you what.
On and off.
Why don't you do you have time to be on my show on Sunday? And we can talk about this because they're getting ready to do a major number on our children. And we have to warn the American people.
I have a longer essay that explains the evil of the Salk vaccine.
Okay.
It would take about two or three. I'm done now. you know, now I've explained everything.
Well, let me get in touch with you after the show, and we'll talk about possibly doing a show about this on Sunday, okay?
That's certainly workable.
Okay.
I can just sign in. All right, now, how do I get out so I'm not paying a huge phone bill now?
Okay, well, you can just hang up. If you can go on your computer, you can listen from your computer.
No, I'm on Skype, and I'm watching the chat window now.
Okay.
I can see the live chat.
Well, I don't think
if
Skype costs you anything. Okay.
I don't think it costs anything.
Yeah.
You can call into TalkShoe on Skype for free?
I believe so. I believe so. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I make all my domestic calls on Skype for free.
Okay. Try that.
Okay,
you should be able to get through. Okay.
Okay, Pastor James. Well, like
right. Okay, Joel.
I always show up for the Sunday service, so I'll be ready to go over the Salk vaccine if you want that.
Very good. Yeah.
Somebody just typed in Lionel Dole blood poisoners. Yes, that's it.
Very
so
good.
Just okay.
Okay,
right,
Doctor
now, how do you
Meyer, thank you very much. Okay.
How do you? Okay, you're gonna.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, bless.
You're going to mute me?
Yes. If you want to stay on, are you on Skype right now or?
Oh, maybe
yes,
because he's talking to a telephone.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just go ahead and mute you, and hopefully you won't get a big phone bill.
But even the Skype bill should only be a penny a minute or 2 cents.
Right.
A minute,
yeah. Avenger says Skype is not free. Okay. So
it's not free. I'm sorry. It's not free when you call into a telephone.
Okay.
But
it's
still only 2 cents a minute, I think, or
something like that. Okay. All right. Okay, Joel, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Okay,
Pastor.
Okay. Yabba. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and mute Joel here. All right, so, yeah, so that's very interesting information. Obviously, the Jews have a multi-generational campaign going on against the white race. And
right, but the little book was open with the Reformation.
Yes.
Since the Reformation and the Gutenberg printing press, every Christian has no excuse for not having read his Bible.
Right.
Period.
Right. Right.
And if you haven't, I have a paper on my website, Should Christians Embrace the Jews? And, of course, the answer is a resounding no.
Right.
But I wrote that for people. I didn't write that paper for the identity, you know, for the choir.
Yeah.
I wrote that paper so that people can pick it up, look at the biblical references, and realize that the Jews are evil and Christians are told to stay the hell away from
That's
them.
Right. That's
it's
right.
very, very plain
yeah.
in many places in Scripture.
Well, that's why the Christian world forced them to live in ghettos throughout
Absolutely.
The Middle Ages. Yes.
And wolves eat sheep. That's what they do.
That's right.
And when you lend your trust in these people, well, they killed Christ.
Yes.
And you're going to get the same treatment.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt that you're going to get the same treatment.
For sure. Absolutely. Okay, so before we get into tonight's subject, I have several announcements, two or three announcements here. Number one, I just received a call about one of our white prisoners in a Florida prison. in Florida, Tony Owen Dupree, who has been repeatedly beaten and has reported that some black prison guards are forcing white prisoners to be raped by non-white prisoners, and they're, you know, allowing this and actually creating the circumstances where this happens. And because he has been speaking out about this, he is now being beaten, and he's in solitary confinement over this issue. And so I just want all of you to be aware of what's going on in our prison system. Please pray for Tony Owen Dupree in the Florida prison system. We're going to try to come to his aid and give him some legal help, because he has put together the paperwork to file a complaint, and then they threw him in solitary confinement and stole the paperwork.
They will take your paperwork and just rip it up.
Right.
Your help has to be from outside the system.
Right. So we need
you
to
can't help yourself from inside the system,
yeah,
because they'll raid your cube. I've been through it. They take all your papers. They make them disappear, and you have absolutely no recourse.
Yes, yes. They do this all the time. And he has asked us to try to locate a gentleman by the name of John B. Baumgartner, who apparently also is either in Georgia or Florida. So if anybody knows Mr. Baumgartner, who I guess is also a former prisoner and has been, you know, assisting white prisoners, but he has been unable to reach this Mr. Baumgartner. So if anybody knows where he is, tell him that Tony Owen Dupree is trying to reach him. In the meantime, we will pray for you, Tony, and I will also get John W. Gerhardt of the Liberty Rights Advocates on this case so that this doesn't happen anymore. And we certainly do not want our white prisoners being raped at the insistence of black guards in the prison. Folks, this is an outrageous situation, absolutely outrageous. And we will certainly call upon the hellfire of Yahweh to come down upon these prison guards who do such things, and the prison system which allows these things to happen. Okay. Now, a couple more things. First of all, there's been I get emails from Jews, and they're not, you know, a part of my mailing list, but they constantly find out about me and send me emails, and they keep on insisting that the Edomites were destroyed long ago. Of course, that's a lie, because they're trying to cover their own tracks. And so I want to quote from the book of Second Esdras, chapter 6, and it's talking about the end of the world, okay? And it says, and you know, the division between our era now and the new era after the judgment day. And the question is, what shall be the parting asunder of the times, or when shall be the end of the first and the beginning of it that followeth? And the angel answered Esdras and said, from Abraham unto Isaac, when Jacob and Esau were born of him, Jacob's hand held first the heel of Esau. For Esau is the end of this world, and Jacob is the beginning of it that followeth. Okay? So the Edomites will be with us until the judgment day, okay? Proof right from the second book of Second Esdras in the Apocrypha, folks, which was removed mysteriously sometime in the middle of the 18th century from your King James Bible. Okay, any comments on that, Bill?
Well, that's the wheat and the tares that
that's
we're
right.
about to
that's
lead into.
That's right, the wheat into. And the tares. Yes,
and,
yes.
And the children of Cain are the tares, and the children of Jacob are the wheat.
Yeah, okay, so I want to start today's show by prefacing Matthew 5:11 and Matthew 5:14. Blessed are you when men revile and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so men persecuted the prophets who were before you. And there's nobody being persecuted like our people, folks. The mainstream Christians aren't being persecuted. They will be, but they're not being persecuted like we are. Matthew 5:14, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hid, nor do men light a lamp and put it under a bushel, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. So, folks, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to let our light shine, because what's light? It's the truth, the light of truth. And, we've been talking about our Internet service, and we have this free service available that Yahweh has provided with us, for us, rather. And, we thank TalkShoe.com for giving us this pedestal where we can teach the truth unencumbered by the Edomites. Okay? All right, so here we go. Matthew chapter 13. The same day went Jesus out of the house and sat by the seaside, and great multitudes were gathered together to him, so that he went into a ship and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. And he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, Behold, a sower went forth to sow, and when he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowls came up and devoured them. Some fell upon stony places, where they had not much earth, and immediately they sprung up, because they had no deepness of the earth. And when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and thorns sprung up and choked them. But others fell into good ground and brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, some 30-fold. Who has ears to hear, let him hear. Okay, so what's your interpretation of this first parable?
Well, we should probably read the explanation first. And,
okay.
And, yeah, I have some comments about this parable, definitely.
Okay. All right, so what's your explanation?
Well, if you're in deep earth, you've read the scriptures.
Okay.
You've
got
studied the word.
Too. Yes.
You know some history. You know who's who.
Yes.
You know
what's what.
The Bible. You know, when the English settlers came here, if you read the early writings of the people of the Plymouth Colony, they knew that they were Israel.
That's right.
They knew that the Jews were the enemies of God.
That's right.
They didn't know the history of the dispersed Israelites.
Yes.
They did not know the fullness of the history of the Edomites. However, they knew that because they fulfilled the prophecies of the Old Testament,
yes,
concerning the children of Israel, that they must have been the children of Israel.
Yes.
And
yes,
they wrote it all the time.
Right, right.
And they just knew it in their hearts.
Yes, yes. Now, as I understand it, the Hebrew words for bull and unicorn are angly and eggly. And those are the names that the Anglo-Saxons.
Well, yes, I'm convinced that the word angle came from the Hebrew word for bill, for
okay,
bull. And I believe it's in my English from Hebrew
right
list.
Try not to take too much credit, Bill.
Yeah, I believe it's in
bull,
my English from Hebrew list on my website on Christmas.
Okay, yes.
Now,
yes.
Now the what I'm saying is that these people read the scriptures. That's the deep earth.
Yes.
And they knew, and they blossomed.
Yes.
And today, Judeo-Christians do not read the scriptures.
No, they don't.
They're in the shallow earth.
Mm-hmm.
They have no roots.
Yeah.
They have no foundation.
They're
and
weak.
Satan comes and snatches them away.
Yes.
And they're Christian Zionists.
They're Christian weeds. Yes.
Right,
they're Christian
absolutely
weeds.
They're just as good as the Jewish Zionists. They're
yes,
the same thing.
Yes. Yeah, and in fact, in many cases, they're worse, because it seems like they're calling for Palestinians to die even more than Jews are.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And the meaning of this parable is that if you're not established in the Word,
mm-hmm,
you're either going to be strangled by the tares, or you're going to be just as good as one of them.
Right, right, right. And so obviously, only the ones in the last category, verse 8, but others fell into good ground and brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, some 30-fold. That's talking about those of us who study the Word and try to live accordingly, which is not true of Judeo-Christianity at all. They're following a totally different spirit, namely the spirit of the televangelists and the race mixers.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, verse 10. You got any more before I go to verse 10?
Yeah, well, the televangelists are race mixers.
That's right.
That's pretty clear. I mean,
yeah,
John
yeah,
Hagee,
Paula White, and who's the guy, her
I hope John Hagee's kids are vaccinated first.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. Yeah, all televangelists must be vaccinated, and all their
yeah
followers. Yes, there you go. Okay, verse 11. He answered and said to them, because it is given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. Wow.
Well,
you mean there's people that Jesus does not want to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven?
Evidently, there's you know, if you go to New York City right now and draw a large crowd, you're going to get all kinds of people. And ancient Judea, I mean, it was a little less diverse.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't have Filipinos and African Negroes in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still, you had Canaanites and Edomites and Greeks and Romans and Judeans and Galileans. And you probably had Persians and Egyptians. You had a very diverse crowd.
Yes.
It was, you know, the ancient world was very cosmopolitan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. But here, this is totally refutes the universalistic claim that the gospel is for everybody. It's not for everybody, folks. Jesus says very clearly here, verse 11, it's not for everybody.
An entire segment of the population is being eliminated here.
Right. Right. And now, and this is totally verified in these next few verses. I'm going to go read through 12 through 15 straight because I want to prove to you that Jesus Christ himself says that this gospel is only for a chosen few, and there are people out there, and he's talking about the crowd that he's addressing, that he does not even want to convert. Okay? Tell that to your Judaic Christian minister. Here we go, verse 12. For whomsoever has, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever has not, from him shall be taken away even that he has. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they, seeing, see not, and hearing, they hear not. Neither do they understand. Jews can't understand the word. They just can't understand it. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which says, by hearing you shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing you shall see and shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. So he doesn't even want to talk to these people, just on the outside chance that they might be converted and healed. Well, didn't Peter and Jude say there are certain spirits, certain individuals that have already been cast down into the underworld, simply awaiting judgment?
Well, yeah. Well, there's that can be. Well, Christ went and spoke the gospel to the spirits in prison.
Yes.
I might have a different take on that than you.
Okay.
I think that is representative of the spirits of the children of Adam, who were estranged from Yahweh.
Okay.
You know, because of the fall of Adam and the estrangement of Israel from Yahweh, there was no communion between the spirits of those dead people and God until they received the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's not talking about the enemy. That's talking about us.
Right.
And that's the whole, you know, every branch of our race, and this is evident in Akkadian texts, And in all the Greek myths and in the Hebrew, you know, the Heracles and Odysseus were both said to have visited the underworld.
Okay.
And seen the spirits of the dead. And the Akkadians, who were the Assyrians, had the same myths, had the same stories. And that's only a reflection of the belief that the Hebrews have also.
Right.
That the spirits of dead white men go to Sheol.
Right. Right.
And that we could call that hell.
Right.
And yes, the Germanic tribes had the same beliefs.
Mm-hmm,
and it was called Niflheim.
Right.
And in Greek, it was called Tartarus. The Akkadians simply called it the underworld. The Hebrews called it Sheol.
Yeah.
And the Germanic tribes called it Niflheim.
Right. Right.
And it was the underworld where the dead went. And that was an old world myth.
Right.
But I believe it was an absolute truth. However, it's, you know, Yahshua Christ smashed the gates of hell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only metaphorical of a state of spiritual existence apart from or estranged from Yahweh.
All right, yeah. Well, you know, there's no doubt, you know, everything you just said is absolutely true. But I was referring to those souls of the fallen angels that have
been... Well, they're bound in the pits of Tartarus, according... You're right. They're bound there until...
Right.
In darkness until the day of judgment.
Right, and they're on death row.
Right. That's a whole different... You know, they're not the ones that Christ... Did,
right.
That,
and they're not coming back. They're just down there waiting for the judgment day when they will be exterminated. That's when they go through the second death.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah. Okay, so let's continue here. Verse 16. But blessed are your eyes, okay, he's talking to his disciples, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For verily I say to you, that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which you see, and have not seen them. And to hear those things which you hear and have not heard them. Hear you, therefore, the parable of the sower. And he goes on to explain the parable we just briefly discussed. So let me just go through it here from verses 19 through 23. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom, now the kingdom, folks, not the gospel of personal salvation, the kingdom, and actually Niflheim, I think, is a corruption of Mittelheim, which means middle, in between. Our world and the spirit world, and then there's another hell below that. Okay.
Well, right. The Germanic they had several levels of existence.
Right.
But, you know,
right.
Actually, the Hebrews do too, because Paul talks about seven heavens.
Yes, and many mansions. Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
And I mean, there's no disparity in the two belief systems, except
right.
the nomenclature is different.
Yeah, and then this verse totally verifies your analysis that the Christian weeds get plucked by the evil ones. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and understands it not, then comes the wicked one and catches away that which was sown in his heart. That is he which received seed by the wayside.
And but that's what John Hagee does every time he opens his mouth.
That's right. That's right. It's shallow teaching. Absolutely shallow teaching, and those
people that haven't studied the word,
right, and they're ripe for the plucking, and they get plucked like chickens. But he that received the seed into stony places, the same as he that hears the word, and anon with joy receives it. So, okay, so this is like a deeper level of understanding, but still not very deep. Yet has he not root in himself, but endures for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, by and by he is offended. Okay, so that includes those Christians who are offended when they're asked to stand behind Jesus.
Well, right, and I've seen it. I've seen this all the time. You know, I mean, a guy will come along and he'll learn the identity message, and then as soon as somebody accuses him of being a racist, he's prostrating himself before the altar of Baal.
That's right. That's right. Okay, verse 22. He also that received seed among the thorns is he that hears the word. And the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches chokes the word, and he becomes unfruitful. Well, that's people who have too much money and too much time on their hands, and they don't use it to study the word.
Right, and people that are engaged, I mean, not everybody, because some of us, you know, work hard but still manage to take the time to spend and devote the things that we have to do.
Right.
But most people with their own businesses that work 16, 18 hours a day, and they get this in their mind that all they need is money, and that's all they pursue.
Right, and that's all the energy they have.
Yeah, but I mean, I've seen a lot of people do it that were otherwise good people that just,
right.
They get that pursuit of money,
mm-hmm.
and that's the only goal they have. They lose sight of everything else.
Yeah, they seek not first the kingdom, as we're instructed to do.
Right,
exactly.
And that's no pursuit.
That's right.
It's vain.
Okay, verse 23, but he that received seed into the good ground is he that hears the word and understands it, which also bears fruit and brings forth some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. Okay, so obviously a lot of this seed it doesn't grow up to be fruitful plants. Okay, so... And we're talking about mainstream Christianity here, folks. Very little fruit coming from mainstream Christianity. Okay, verse 24. Another parable he put forth to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a man which sowed good seed. You know, we're talking about seed. What seed? What does seed mean, Bill?
Sperma is, it's where you come from.
Yeah, and in the Old Testament, the word is zera, which means seed in the Old Testament.
Right.
And, okay, it means offspring, it means descendants. It doesn't mean spiritual fruit. It means literal fruit, folks.
Right. In my translation, the word sperma is always translated offspring because that's what it meant to the Greeks.
Yes. Okay. Verse 24.
Spora meant parentage, and its opposite was sperma, which meant offspring.
Yes. Okay, great. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares. Now we're starting to get to the meat of the message here. Sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said to him, Sir, did not you sow good seed in your field? From where then has it tares? He said to them, An enemy has done this. Underline that, folks. An enemy has done this. The servants said to him, Will you then that we go and gather them up? So, Bill, who's this enemy?
Well, in order to understand who the enemy was, we have to first ask the question, when was the wheat sown?
Right.
When was the wheat sown?
Okay. Well, I know the answer. Are you being rhetorical?
I'm sort of being rhetorical.
Yes.
But it's a very direct answer because it could only happen in the garden.
Genesis.
We sow seeds in a garden.
Genesis 3:15.
Well, absolutely. The wheat was sown in Genesis 1:26 to 28.
Okay.
Okay? The tares are sown in Genesis chapter 3.
Yeah, right.
But that's the only place that you could go. And this proves also that Yahshua is Yahweh come in the flesh because he's taking credit for having sown the wheat.
Right.
Okay? Now he says the wheat was sown by the Son of Man.
Mm-hmm.
Now the aside from that, there's no other place because he is talking about the past tense.
Yes.
The gospel has not yet gone out to the world.
Right. Well, and that's why Paul refers to Yahshua Messiah as the second Adam.
Well, absolutely. And it's very clear that Yahshua is the sower of the wheat, and that can only happen in Genesis 1:26 to 28.
Right.
So when did the devil sneak in to sow the tares?
That
right. can only be Genesis chapter 3.
Right, right. And I suppose you can also include Genesis chapter 6 as well.
But
it began in Genesis 3, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, okay. Let's continue verse 29. But he said, Nay, lest when you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, Gather you together first the tares, and bind them up in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Now, since we're talking about seed and offspring, literal children here, literal people, what's this business about burning, gathering and burning? That's not Christian, is it?
Well, it absolutely is Christian.
There you go.
It depends on what your
theology
angle
is.
On Christianity is.
That's right.
It's Christian to love the creation created by Yahweh.
Yes.
And
yes.
to hate anybody and anything that has corrupted it.
Yeah.
And those corruptions.
Right. Right.
And Christians cannot embrace race mixed people.
Evil. They cannot embrace evil.
Right, because they are evil from their conception.
That's right. That's right.
They're contrary to the creation of Yahweh.
Fausto,
it's love to be a racist.
Fausto asks, I have always heard that angels are immortal.
Well, right, but Fausto, I think he's asking me about these angels, why they're bound in Tartarus because
yes.
they're immortal. Well, they're bound in Tartarus. They're not dead, are they?
No, they're not dead. No.
It's clear in the Old Testament, it's clear to me, that angels, as Christ talks about the angels in heaven,
yes.
are spiritual beings. However, they obviously, from the biblical accounts of the Old Testament, have the ability to take on,
right.
To manifest themselves on a physical plane at will.
Right. Possibly not as at will, but certainly under certain circumstances, because as Greg and I were discussing the book of Enoch last Sunday, they were burning with lust for the white women of the world.
Well, right. And in order to fulfill that lust, they
yes.
had to be on this plane.
Right.
I mean.
And somehow they had to materialize as males in order to fulfill their lust. And so that, you know, there's an obvious connection there. Okay.
Right. And there's angels in the Old Testament. I hate to get into certain things because I can't prove them. But some things in are as of yet unanswered to us And that doesn't mean that they're fairy tales. We just don't, we have to admit as men that we just don't have all the answers.
Sure.
I mean, Jewish science wants to pretend that it has all the answers, and they could scoff all they want, but we know who they are.
Yeah.
You know, this men in the account of Lot, for instance, that these men had abilities. They looked and appeared to be like men, but they had abilities that men don't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yes.
they struck their their would-be paramours blind.
Right, right.
You know, I say would-be paramours in a very sarcastic sense.
Right.
They struck those perverted sexual deviants blind and at will. I mean, I can't do that. I wish I could.
Right.
I'd go for a ride in New York City.
So I think an answer to Fausto's question is, well, yeah, perhaps they were created to be immortal, but since they fell, now
they're
susceptible to death.
They're bound in Tartarus and you know, everything that's immortal is still only immortal at the will of Yahweh.
That's right.
You know, and when he wishes for them to to be destroyed, I'm sure they will be destroyed at that last day.
Patricia says hell is not hot enough for Hagee. Skip Baker's calling in. I think he's getting bumped off constantly, so he's called in. Skip, are you there?
Yeah.
Did you call in to make a question or comment, or are you tired of getting bumped off?
Well, I got tired of being bumped off, so I thought I'd listen to you on the phone.
All right. Okay. All right.
Okay.
I'll mute you. If you have a comment or question, just give me a yell on the chat room screen, okay?
Okay. Will do.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. All right. So here we go. I'm going to quote comments here. Here's from an article called The Tares by Ed Tarkowski, because we're talking about the reason that Yahshua Messiah draws this parallel between tares and the wheat is because there are certain biological similarities between the two, okay? And it's very instructive to understand the difference and the similarities between literal tares, biological tares, and what we know as wheat. Okay, so Holman's Bible Dictionary defines tares as follows. Tares, KGV, term for grassy weeds resembling wheat. Okay, first clue, they resemble wheat. Generally identified as darnel, genus Lolium. It is pretty much accepted today that the tares Jesus spoke of are darnel of the genus Lolium. Cephalaria syriaca is also a possibility mentioned by some researchers, but based on archaeological studies, it is evident in Bible times would seem to indicate it is not the tare of the Bible. Secular dictionaries also define the tare as most likely being darnel. Darnel is a weed grass, probably bearded darnel, like a rabbi, right?
Yeah.
Or Lolium temulentum, that looks very much like wheat until it is mature, when the seeds reveal a great difference. Darnel seeds aren't good for much except as chicken feed or to burn to prevent the spread of this weed. Fascinating.
Absolutely.
Any comments?
The word is Zizanian, and it is identified commonly with darnel.
Zizania. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Easton's Bible Dictionary describes tares as follows. The bearded darnel mentioned only in Matthew chapter 13, it is the Lolium temulentum, a species of ryegrass, the seeds of which are a strong soporific poison, which means it's a poison that puts you to sleep. It bears the closest resemblance to wheat till the ear appears, and only then the difference is discovered. It grows plentifully in Syria and Palestine. Now, isn't this the fact about the Jewish people? When they're young, they look like us, but when they get old, they start looking like tares.
Well, it's very true that no matter how mixed they are with us, when they get older, those genes, just those Hittite genes, predominate.
Right.
And there's no doubt at all about that. I mean, I've seen it over and over again back in New Jersey.
Yes, yeah. So this is really important stuff, folks, the background information behind these two, behind this weed and true wheat, okay?
Yahshua Christ, let me say, Yahshua Christ didn't waste too many words.
No.
And there is an awful lot of profundity in all of his words and a lot of his, the words that he chose to describe things. It's sometimes it just can't be, it's so profound that it can't be described all at once.
Ed asks, was Pinocchio a Jew? Nobody was influenced by one.
Yeah, right. Maybe he was carved from that tear wood.
Yeah, right. He went to that, what was that island that they were having?
I don't know the story. I just know he was a puppet.
Fantasy Island or something like that, you know, where they partook of all kinds of sins. And, you know, of Jewish culture, basically, is what they went to the island for. And now here, the Smith's Bible Dictionary offers these comments on the tares. Quote, "There can be little doubt that the zizania of the parable in Matthew 13 denotes the weed called darnel. The grains of the L. temulentum, if eaten, produce convulsions and even death." Now, it's my understanding, and Bill, maybe you have heard this too, that Salem. Because the Salem witch trials, isn't it the case that they have discovered that the so-called witches were delusional because they were eating either tares or some kind of fungus?
There is a connection, and it's also in medieval Germany, and
okay.
I think it's related to a fungus.
Yes.
And the stories also exist in medieval Germany, you know, about witches, and it's been, by archaeologists, it's been related to a certain fungus that affects the kids.
Yes, yeah, and so, but it says right here, if we eat this L. temulentum, it can produce convulsions and even death, and it creates delusional behavior, too. So it's quite possible that what actually happened at Salem was that they were, yes, somebody, a poison fungi ergot or something. R.P. Wake has chimed in with that. And so, yeah, it's quite possible that they were dealing with a fungus-type LSD, right? An LSD-type experience.
The Jews invented LSD.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. Okay. So from botanical.com, it says this. "The admixture of the grain with those of the nutritious cereals amongst which it is often found growing should be guarded against, as its properties are generally regarded as deleterious. Gerard tells us the new bread wherein darnel is eaten hot causeth drunkenness. When darnel has been given medicinally in a harmful quantity, it is recorded to have produced all the symptoms of drunkenness, a general trembling, followed by inability to walk, hindered speech, and vomiting. For this reason, the French call it darnel," okay, Ivray, from I-V-R-E, drunkenness. The word darnel is itself of French origin and testifies to its intoxicating qualities, being derived from an old French word darné, signifying stupefied. Okay, now, have not the Christians of this world been stupefied by the tares?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've been stupefied by it. We have been, and this goes back to what I was just saying about the profundity of many of Yahshua's statements.
Mm-hmm.
How even though it's, you really have to study to get to the heart of what he's saying, it's a lot deeper than it ever appears on the surface.
That's right.
It always is.
Jesus was a botanist.
Well, he was God. And,
that's
and,
right. He created this world.
The depth of his statements and the beauty of many of the things that he said.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, having studied all his words in Greek and poured through the lexicons, and it's absolutely clear that the average man could no way, I mean, even though some of the Greeks were very brilliant philosophers and very brilliant men, I've compared his words to many of the Greek poets and philosophers, and the average Greek could have never, ever said such things.
Okay, one more comment. This is from a different article called Tares, Darnel, and Zawan, and I forget the website this came off of, but it says, "Candidates for tares and Zawan." I'm just going to quote one short paragraph here. "There is one report of some lolium remotum shrank gains in the cache of wheat at an archaeological site in Syria." This is talking about archaeological finds of tares, you know, of different kinds. "This species is also segetal, S-E-G-E-T-A-L, restricted to cultivated fields. and similar to El Temulentum. El Temulentum is more or less cosmopolitan. What interesting comments.
Right.
So what do Jews do?
They're cosmopolitan.
They're cosmopolitans that inhabit cultivated fields. They don't cultivate their own fields.
No way. Never happened. They haven't. A Jew hasn't cultivated his own fields since Cain.
The similarities between these biological aspects of Tares and modern Jews, and of course Jews throughout history, are simply astounding, folks. Simply astounding. The evidence is overwhelming that we're talking about Jews, okay? Verse 31, another parable put he forth to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like to a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed in the least of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. Okay, so very, very short parable. Just give us your take on it. I'm sure this one's been done to death.
Is the story of our race.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were eight of us after the flood.
Right.
There were 76 of us that went down to Egypt.
Yes.
We were the smallest of all nations.
That's right.
There was one of us that came into the land of Canaan. Well, two if you want to count Sarah.
Yeah.
We have to count Sarah.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, we were again and again reduced to very small numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew to rule the entire world in a very short time.
Yes.
I mean, if you want to count from the days of Jacob to the days of the English Empire, that's still a very short time.
Yes.
On a world scale.
Right.
Now,
right.
I don't see Indians pouring into China.
Yes.
I don't see Africans pouring into Japan. And I only see the other races coming here.
Yes.
Now, if you want to consider something profound, if the other races have their origin, at least partially, in the fallen angels,
mm-hmm.
they're the birds of heaven.
That's right.
And we are the mustard tree.
Yes.
And they're
yes,
coming they to nest in our branches.
That's right.
The kingdom of heaven is wholly evident.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and we're the ones destined to bring it out. People in the chat room are making a very good point that I forgot to bring up, that namely when the tares ripen, they're black heads. They have black heads. And their black heads stand straight up, very, very proud and arrogant, okay? Unlike the heads of the wheat, which bow to the heavens, okay?
Well,
we're supposed to be humble, folks. Okay?
Yahweh's word and Yahweh's creation have absolutely no difference between them. They're the same. They agree in every way.
Yeah, and so we can tell. One of the ways to tell the difference is between our heads, our hair is golden brown, and we bow our heads to Yahweh. Where the Jews are black headed. Just think of them in their black fedoras, claiming that God never makes a decision unless he consults a rabbi. Okay. One of the major differences between the true religion and their religion is that they claim to be even more smart or intelligent than Yahweh himself. Verse 33, another parable spoke he to them. The kingdom of heaven is like to leaven, which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal till the whole was leavened. Okay, and so this is a one-verse parable. Do you want to discuss that one?
Well, you just don't really see it until it's there.
Yeah.
You don't see the leaven in the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Until it has caused the dough to swell.
Yes.
And then you wonder what caused the dough to swell.
Right, right. What do you make of the three measures? Are we talking about
three? I know that sounds like the three might have a meaning, but I really can't.
Three ages, perhaps, till the whole is leavened?
I don't know. It could have a lot of different meanings.
Okay.
But I would just be conjecturing.
Yeah, okay. Let's not conjecture.
I don't have an opinion about everything.
Right.
Sorry.
Verse 34. All these things spoke Jesus to the multitude in parables, and without a parable spoke he not to them, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying, I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter things which have been kept secret from the foundation of the world. Psalm 78.
There we go. Right now, I got to cut in right here.
Okay.
everybody says, well, why isn't two seed line taught in the Old Testament? You know, why weren't the children of two seed, the children of Israel weren't directly taught two seed line? And this is why. He uttered things kept secret.
Yes.
Since the foundation of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's the book of Genesis is also a parable.
Yes.
At least the you know, Genesis chapters 2, 3, and 4
right.
are a parable.
Mm-hmm.
Genesis chapter 5 actually starts a new book.
Mm-hmm.
And it says this is the book of you know, the descendants of Adam.
That's right.
It starts an entirely new book.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And the creation story is a parable.
Yeah, and so what's set forth in Genesis chapters, well, 1, 2, and 3, really, in parabolic form, is actually laid out in literal descent form from chapter 5 on. And actually in chapter 4,
because we're given seed. There's no doubt.
Yes.
You know, we have a garden. We have good seed sown in the garden. We have an enemy come in. He sows the evil seed.
Yes.
And then, you know, the evil seed starts to kill the good seed, the Cain and Abel story. And then from there, we have an actual history of the descendants of Seth.
Yes. Okay.
Starting from Genesis chapter 5.
All right. So, folks, here we come. Here is the real parable of the wheat and the tares, which actually starts in verse 38, actually 37.
Well, this is Joshua's explanation of it.
Yes. Yeah, well, yeah. He explains it. Verse 36, then Jesus sent the multitude away, and he went into the house. And his disciples came to him, saying, declare to us the parable of the tares of the field. Please explain it to us. You know, you made this parable to the multitude. Now you sent the multitude away. Now we want to know what you meant by all this. Okay, verse 37. He answered and said to them, he that sows the good seed is the Son of Man.
Joshua is Yahweh.
Now, of course, for the word seed here, isn't it still sperma?
It's still sperma.
Okay.
It still only comes from that same place.
We're not talking about spiritual Israelites.
No, we're talking about physical, literal Israelites.
That's right.
Well, physical, literal Adamites in this sense.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Verse 38, the field is the world. All right, is this the Greek word cosmos here?
Well, yes. The word means society. Or it could mean Adamic society,
mm-hmm.
because it's what was created in the garden.
Right.
And that's only the Adamic race.
Okay, and we live in the world, you know, so. But continuing here, the good seed are the children of the kingdom, okay? But the tares are the children of the wicked one.
And that's physical, literal children.
Physical, literal children, absolutely.
It's not spiritual children. They were sown.
That's right. The enemy that sowed them is the devil.
He didn't sow anything into wheat.
Mm-hmm.
He sowed tares.
Yes, yes.
And that cannot be spiritualized.
Yeah, and there's mixed race people that we know as Edomites. Yes.
Right, and notice, and this is another thing I want to bring up with this parable. You know, I'm going to harp just a little bit. A lot of people want to make excuses for certain other races on the planet, and I would say that even though we don't know whether there were two-legged beasts in the beast creation or not, and I know you believe there were,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine. I don't really – but what I'm going to say is that even if there were, every non-white race that exists today has been corrupted.
Yes.
None of them are in their original form.
Okay.
And that's why Yahshua only makes two groups of people, wheat and tares.
Right.
Two groups of people, sheep and goats.
Right.
There's no third category anywhere.
Okay.
You're either a sheep or a goat. You're either a wheat or a tare.
Okay. Well, he's speaking about the enemy, okay, and an enemy that sold them, and to the extent that all races, and including ours, to the extent that we're race mixed.
Well, yes, we're not race mixed.
Not the seed of the kingdom.
Race mixed.
Yes,
and that's, you know, that's why we have Egyptians today that don't. They're not like us.
Mm-hmm.
The original Egyptians were white.
Right.
That's why we have Iranians today.
Yes.
They're not like us. The original Iranians were white. That's why we have Libyans and all of these people are kind of in between black and white, or in between whatever the Cain looked like or whatever, but they're not white. They're almost white, but they're not quite.
Yes.
And, or a lot of, you know, I've seen Jordanians that to a lot of people mm-hmm. would mistake them for white.
Right.
But they're not.
Yeah.
And that's because they all these other races are
yes.
the products of various mixtures at one
right.
time or another.
Right. Well, you know, we'll see, you know, who's left after the judgment day, whether the purebred Chinese and the blacks of Africa and the Indians of Peru will remain around. We'll see.
I seriously doubt it. And that's because Yahshua breaks the world into only two
mm-hmm.
groups,
yes.
wheat and tares, sheep
yes.
and goats.
Yes.
No matter how you want to name the groups, there's only two.
Yes.
And we know that the sheep are white. And,
mm-hmm.
and there's no non-whites that could possibly be sheep.
Right. Right.
Mary had a little lamb, and it's
oh, yeah,
as white
yeah.
as snow.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so where were we? Let me go to the tares are the children of the wicked one, verse 38, 39. The enemy that sowed them is the devil. The harvest is at the end of the world, and the reapers are the angels. Okay? I mean, is there anything unclear about this?
Nothing at all.
The harvest is the end of the world, folks. It's coming right up. Verse 40.
So this also precludes, you know, some of these crazy Christians believe that everybody's going to be converted at the last minute. And this doesn't allow for that.
No,
Scripture
doesn't
allow for that.
No.
Otherwise, it wouldn't talk about tares at the end of the world.
Well, verse 40 confirms what you're saying. As therefore the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so shall it be in the end of the world. They're not going to be converted, and we just quoted in Matthew 13:15.
There's no mass conversions. Most Christians are simply deceived. They haven't read their Bibles.
Right.
John Hagee's getting away with lying to them because they haven't read their Bibles.
That's right.
There's no mass conversion of Jews at the end of the world.
No.
There's only – well, there is a mass conversion of Jews,
right.
and I'm sorry, there is.
their state
what they are
their
now
– existence will be converted,
to,
yes.
to ashes.
Yes.
That's it. That's their conversion.
That's right.
Ashes.
Okay. Ashes to ashes. Verse 41. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and them which do iniquity. But aren't we being told that we're all saved no matter how bad we've been?
Well, they're lied to consistently.
Yes.
I mean, it's terrible.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing. There's nothing in the Bible that supports any of this universalistic garbage, folks. Absolutely nothing. Verse 42, and shall cast them into a furnace of fire. There shall be a wailing and a gnashing of teeth. Now, if you don't know what gnashing of teeth means, try to put your lower jaw against your upper jaw. That is, clench your teeth together and hold them like that for, you know, like try to do it for 30 seconds, folks, and you'll start to feel pain. But when you're in a clenched jaw situation because you're experiencing other kinds of pain, then you get the message of what he's trying to tell us here. There is going to be some serious pain going on when this gnashing of teeth comes about. There will be a wailing and a gnashing of teeth. Then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Who has ears to hear, let him hear.
Now, who else
is trying to be righteous in the world today?
I have a pun.
Okay.
Because somebody in the forum earlier in the program made a joke and asked for a recipe of, you know, how to turn Jews into shades. But when the Jews are removed, the righteous shine forth, that means that the Jews are already lampshades.
That's right.
They're already.
Okay. Well, they're dust.
They're lampshades now.
They're smoke. They're smoke. There you go. Verse 44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like to treasure hidden in the field, that the which, when a man has found, he hides, and for joy thereof goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. Okay, so in other words, once you discover Christian identity, you leave everything else behind. Okay.
Well, that's it. I've always said about this saying that once you discover that your religion is your race.
Yes.
That nothing else is important to you except your race.
Yes.
Because true religion, I mean, when I was a child in the Catholic Church and listening to the garbage that they spew, religion meant nothing to me.
Right.
Because I knew it was garbage.
Right.
I didn't know why it was garbage. I just knew it was garbage.
That's right.
And
it just didn't resonate with you. Same here.
Right. And when I learned the identity message and I read the Bible and understood it from that viewpoint, it made perfect sense.
That's right.
My religion, I realized, was my race.
Yeah, and you had a purpose in life, which you never had before.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's selling that pearl and buying that, buying that field or going and selling everything you have and buying that field, because nothing else is important to you anymore.
It's more precious than gold.
Absolutely. Because now life and religion make sense now.
Yes. Absolutely. Very good. Verse 45. Again, the kingdom, and again, folks, it says the kingdom of heaven is not talking about, good times in this world, on this planet, folks. The kingdom of heaven is like to a merchant man who's seeking goodly pearls, who when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like to a net that was cast into the sea and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into vessels, but cast the bad away.
Now, here we go. Just like there's only wheat and tares and sheep and goats, there's only good fish and bad fish.
Right.
Now, that word that is rendered kind here in the King James Version of the Bible,
okay,
it's the word genos. It means race.
Mm-hmm.
Gathered of every race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is inescapable to interpret that in that manner.
Right.
That a kind is a genos, is a race.
Yeah.
And that's the word that the King James translators often, whenever they can, even though it really means race, they translated it generation.
Sure.
Well, gathered of every generation doesn't really make any sense in this context.
No, it doesn't.
But we don't
pull in the modern sense. Yes.
Ages of fishes out of the net.
Right. Right. Yeah.
This is gathered of every race.
Yes.
And there's good race. There's a good race.
Yes.
And all the other races are bad.
Well, I see it that in a slightly different way, that there's good and evil in all races, and that the good ones of particular races, such as Africans, I look at it this way. They're all going back to Africa. All the Chinamen are going back
to
China.
But that's not what this says. I mean, fish. The fish don't get thrown back in the sea. The fish get thrown on the seashore.
Uh-huh.
And what happens to fish on the seashore?
Yes. Well, it says sever the wicked from the just. And so we'll see. We'll see what transpires at the judgment day. Okay, we'll be witnesses. Okay, verse 50. And shall cast them into the furnace of fire. There shall be a wailing. There's that wailing and gnashing of teeth, folks. It's just love, love, love. Verse 51. Jesus says to them, have you understood all these things?
Well, the wailing and the gnashing of teeth comes from the people that thought that they were Christians.
That's right.
And they can't be Christians.
That's right.
And that's your African Christians and your Chinese Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And
your Christian Zionists.
They can't be Christians.
And your Judeo-Christians, yes.
Well, those people will they're not good enough, even though they were.
Yeah. Yeah, they think so highly of themselves that they won't be allowed into the kingdom. Okay. And they say to him, yea, Lord, we have understood. Verse 52, then he said to them, therefore, every scribe which is instructed to the kingdom of heaven is like to a man that is a householder, which brings forth out of his treasure things new and old. Okay, so we're instructed to be householders, folks. We're our families. We're supposed to entrust our families to this message. This is a family/racial message. Correct, Bill?
Well, it's absolutely racial in every respect.
Okay, verse 53. And it came to pass that when Jesus had finished these parables, he departed from there. And when he was come into his own country, which was Galilee, he taught them in their synagogue, insomuch that they were astonished and said, and we're astonishing the Christian world today, aren't we? Where has this man this wisdom and these mighty works? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? and his brethren James and Joseph and Simon and Judas and his sisters? Are they not all with us? Where then has this man all these things? And they were offended in him. But Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor, save in his own country and in his own house. Now, aren't we Christian identists of the white race, looked down upon and hated by people of our own race precisely because of what we teach?
Well, right. But, the first complaint here from the people are that here is a man who's a common man.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't possibly, he wasn't schooled in the universities of the day.
Right.
So he can't possibly have any learning.
Yeah.
He's a carpenter.
Right.
You know, we know where he came from because we know his family. They're all here. He didn't go to Harvard. He didn't go away to Princeton. So he can't possibly be learned. He can't possibly have this ability to teach us these truths.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same attitude that we find all the time today.
Well,
what school did you go to?
And that's another similarity between Christian identity and the rest of the world is, you know, we are perceived. Well, you know, most of our people don't have college educations. Okay, they're not part of the philosophy of, you know, worldly, teachings. We don't believe in evolution. We don't believe in feminism. We don't believe in the vast majority of things that this world believes in. We're dumb carpenters.
Well, right, and that's exactly the point I'm trying to make.
Yes.
Is that I'm often rejected because I don't have by people that I know because
right.
I don't have a degree hanging on a wall.
Yeah, so all these contrary and very often profound statements coming from Christian identity are simply either scoffed at or in some uses the word astonished.
Mm-hmm.
I have to turn back to the in verse 54. And they were astonished. The Christian world is astonished at what we teach. Who are these people to tell us what Christianity is supposed to be? Well, if you would read your Bibles, you would understand what it's supposed to be.
Well, it's the Jews that they've gotten their standards from.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. is it too much to ask Christians to read their Bibles?
The university process today is a thought training process.
That's right.
That I am very happy that I don't have.
Yes.
And they want you to be trained in a university before you have any sort of credibility in the outside world, because if you're trained in a university, that means that they are confident
right.
that you will go with their program.
Right, right. Well, a perfect example is economics. The economics curriculum, which when I came back from Vietnam and I took a couple of courses in economics, I was already hip to the Jews and the Federal Reserve System, but I decided to take a couple of courses in economics just to see what's actually taught in the economics curriculum. And I can tell you that the textbook I used, Samuelson, I think his first name is Morton, I'm not sure of his first name, but Samuelson, which was the major text that was being used in the middle 70s, okay? There were maybe two sentences in that entire book about the Federal Reserve, okay? It's all about the Federal Reserve.
Absolutely. That masses the economy.
Two sentences.
That should be the study.
That's right.
There, if you're going to study the modern economy.
That's right. If you want to know economics, you study how the Federal Reserve operates. Then you'll know economics.
I bet there was a lot of mentions of Adam Smith in there, but no, you never actually read Adam Smith.
You're right.
Or at least they never actually had you read Adam Smith.
That's right. That's right. And so, yeah, and then in the seminaries, they teach the commentaries about the Bible by other theologians, and their favorite theologians, most of whom are, of course, nothing close to identity. But do they actually study the Bible?
I bet you didn't get the Lightfoot's commentary.
Yeah, yeah.
From the Talmud.
Yes, yes. Well, guest 8 says, question, is it stated that Jesus will not come back until all Israel knows the message? Well, guess we have a ways to go. Well, no, actually, I think, you know, because I think when we're talking in the parable of the wise and foolish virgins,
half of Israel doesn't know the message.
Right. And they're not allowed into the wedding feast of the Lamb.
Right.
They're excluded. Okay? So it's going to be wailing and gnashing of teeth for the Judeo-Christians. And, you know, and they don't like us for saying that. But, hey, when that day comes, you'll remember that we told you so. Okay?
Well, right. And I take that back to, you know, the statement in Revelation that his people suffered the punishments of Babylon if they don't get out of it.
That's right. That's right. Are you there?
Yes. Hello?
Okay, I heard a click. I thought maybe we lost you there for a second. Okay. So there's one more verse here, verse 58, chapter 13. And he did not many mighty works there because of their unbelief. You know, guess what? Jesus discriminated. He wouldn't do miracles for those people because they refused to believe him.
He discriminates all the time.
He discriminates all the time.
In fact, Yahweh is the author of discrimination.
Yes, yes.
The first discrimination in the Bible came when he didn't accept Cain's sacrifice.
Yeah, and these deluded Christians in the world today think by simply believing in Jesus and not following his example, they're automatically saved just by believing that Jesus walked here. It doesn't matter to them what he did or what he taught. They're concerned about, oh, I believe in Jesus, so I'm saved.
Right, and the problem with that is that the Judeo-Christian clergy has corrupted what the word belief means.
RP says Jesus is a lucky charm.
Yeah, basically, what he's become to them.
That's great.
That's exactly true. That's what he's become to Judeo-Christians, is a lucky charm. They don't want to believe his words. They don't want to consider what's being said in the parable of the net.
Yes.
They just want to say, oh, I believe him, and I'm saved.
Yeah.
That is a very false security.
Yes.
It's a very false sense of security.
Yeah, and guest 8 says, yeah, I thought that Jesus spoke in parables so only the other races would not understand, but that all Israelites would. Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
That's exactly true.
That's what he says in verses 12 through 15. Absolutely.
They still, no matter how much you explain the meaning of the Greek words, they still they'll never understand the parable of the net.
Yes.
They'll always try to make out the word genos to mean something other than race.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing else but race fits there.
Right.
And a kind is a race.
Yeah. Well, it brings back a while back, and I've been booted out of several forums in my career. And this was a forum that was an offshoot of the Pastor Murray organization. And I quoted Isaiah, I believe it's chapter 3, where he says, the show of their countenance will witness against them. Okay? And my interpretation of that, well, it's obvious that race-mixed children, you can tell right away the way their faces look, that they're
and
race-mixed.
That goes right back to Jeremiah 2 and the, you know, the command, the admonishment about the soap. You know, no matter how much soap you have and you try to scrub it, you can't wash it off.
Right.
Your sin can't be washed off.
Right. And then one of the ladies in the forum said, well, that means that they're ashamed. Okay. That's the show of their countenance. And then I said, please read the next verse, which says they are not ashamed.
Right.
Okay. They declare what they should be ashamed of openly.
Yes.
They're not ashamed of it at all.
They do it every day in the New York Times.
Yes. Yeah, and it's all over television. You know, they're sticking it in their faces, as Joel said earlier. Okay, number 7, what about our people who might agree or want to agree but feel obligated to stay in their marriages or churches, communities?
Well, then they are lukewarm.
Okay.
And they will be spewed out of the mouth of Yahshua Christ, according
mm-hmm.
to the Revelation.
Right, right. Well, obviously, people who are stuck in such situations have to do a lot of praying. Obviously, those of us who are in that situation, and a lot of people on my mailing list have, you know, admitted to me that they are. I said, well, you keep praying as hard as you possibly can, you know, because the only example I can give you is the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, where they had to make the decision to put those people away.
Right.
Okay.
It's a hard decision, but
right.
I mean, do you want to seek to please men or to please God?
Yes, yes. And so, you know, you keep praying about that and have Yahweh arrange a situation where you can do that, you know, where you can get out of that situation. And, you know, obviously you can't just throw people out on the street. You know, whether you like it or not, you made a covenant with that person, okay? And you can't just, you can't kill them. You can't just abandon them. You have to provide for them. That's part of the process of, you know, when you have a bad marriage or a mixed marriage, you know, even a bad marriage of any kind. And when you try to break it up, it's hard. It's extremely hard. So all I can say to you is, pray, and pray, so Yahweh can extricate you from that situation, okay? All right, so, yes, and Ezra 9 and 10, all of those, you know, and especially I would say any white woman who marries a Jew, I don't see much hope for that woman. Bill, do you see?
I don't see any hope for her.
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
Yeah, she sold her soul to the devil.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Made a pact with Satan.
Right.
Same
right.
thing with a white man that marries a Jew.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean,
yeah, very, very rarely is that the case. You know, but
she can also extricate herself from that.
Yes.
But I wouldn't recommend she got married again.
Right. So a woman can extricate herself from that situation just by leaving. You know, you're probably going to be cut off financially, you know. But, you know, I think, on the other hand, Yahweh will bless you for doing so.
I believe so.
Yes, yes. Okay, so, folks, so this is, okay, one more question, number 8. When Jesus said not to bury your father and to not to bury your father and follow reference that we are leave family behind if they're not to, okay, I'm not sure which, not to bury your father. Do you know which verse he's talking about?
Well, one of his followers, an unnamed follower, wanted to go back and bury his father, meaning his father was very old and probably expected to mm-hmm. pass away.
Right.
And Christ said, no, follow me. If he who lays his hand to the plow and then turns around to the things behind is not worthy of me.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So if, especially if, you know, if your family is dead set against what you're doing,
right, but that doesn't even necessitate that he's speaking about that. He's
mm-hmm.
just, you know, the word comes first. The work in the kingdom
right,
comes first.
Right, yeah.
And the matters of family come second.
Yeah, and
second,
he says,
and that's just the way it is.
Right.
And it sounds cruel, but that's the way it is.
Your enemies shall be those of your own household.
And we're confronted with that all the time. I have several of my own children just hate me.
Yeah.
For my political beliefs.
Right.
For my political and religious beliefs. And I tell them that's just tough.
Right.
That's, you know, it's no skin off my back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. It wasn't your fault that they strayed away from
Well, absolutely.
It's the world
we
live in.
That I've taken from them is that they've strayed from me. I haven't strayed from them, that's for sure, because,
yes.
I mean, what I believe... Even long before I came into Israel identity, I've adhered to my racial beliefs and to
mm-hmm.
certain other things. And that's
right,
the
right.
way it is.
Yes, and your prison experience has definitely verified all of that.
Oh, it is absolutely what's the word? It's strengthened my resolve, and it's shown me that I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's demonstrated to me all my studies in history and my experience in life and you know, in both sides of life. I mean, the
right.
corporate world and the prison world, because I was a technology manager for a manufacturer, for not a very large manufacturing company, but
mm-hmm.
for a $50 million a year company for several years. So
right.
I've seen life from many different aspects.
Right.
And I'm just, my resolve is strengthened that.
Yeah,
my racial beliefs are absolutely correct.
Right. And I just want to stress one more thing before we end tonight's show, because this is not a message of hate. This is simply, my perception is simply this, that we white Christians, and everybody in the white race for that matter, has been targeted by the Jews for their supremacist and destructive regime called Zionism, okay? And they won't leave us alone. They simply will not leave us alone. They have no right to constantly persecute us and try to tell us how we should live. So it's simply a matter of being left alone. If they would simply leave us alone, I wouldn't have anything against them. Okay?
Well, you know, with the rise of humanism, which came from the Jews.
Yes.
They have managed with humanism and with evolution to break most of us away from the Christian religion.
That's right.
And now they feel they have enough of us broken away from Christianity that they could outright persecute the rest of us.
Yes.
And that all of the white people who are now not Christians but humanists and evolutionists and and all of the other false religions feed right in, play right into their hands, and by that I mean the Wiccans and the Hindus and the Buddhists and all the freaks that think that they should go join the religions of the other races. They play right into the hands of the Jews.
Yes.
And the Jews are now able to attempt at least to persecute the balance of Christianity that they haven't been able to corrupt.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a verse, I forget where it is, but Yahshua Messiah says, of these Judeo-Christians, because there's nobody else he could be speaking about, that they will try to kill us, they will want to kill us, thinking that they do God service.
Right.
That's deluded, folks. That's totally deluded. Okay? And that's where we're at. That's where our race is spiritually and mentally because of what the Jews have done, the brainwashing number they have performed on our people. So, you know, they hate us for us telling them that they're brainwashed, and that's the last thing they want to hear, but we're trying to save their damn butts and their souls.
Well, you know, Adolf Hitler saved Europe from Joseph Stalin, and look at what we did to him.
Yes. Okay.
And nobody believed
no,
it then
thank
either.
You.
Nobody believed it then either.
Right.
And
no,
they still
you,
don't
they
believe
said.
It.
Yes, right. Well, obviously, actually, you know, most of the Europeans were with Hitler. I mean, every country that the German army came through, they were totally opposed to the Jews. You know, but it was the Zionists who set up Stalin, you know, and they set up the Bolsheviks everywhere. And then they had George Catlett Marshall betray us in the East, and they had Eisenhower betray us in the West. And that all the deals made between Stalin, Roosevelt, and Churchill were all betrayals. And apparently the only general who suspected anything was Patton.
Mark Clark? No,
Patton.
George Patton.
Patton. He was the only one who understood what was going on, and it was too late.
But he was a student of history.
Yes.
He was.
And he hated Jews.
He was a student of the classics.
Right.
And he was a student of the history.
Yes.
You don't understand the new world unless you understand the old world.
That's right.
Because it's a repeat of history.
Yes, that's right.
History repeats itself. And if you don't know what happened in the past, you don't know what's coming for you in the future.
Right. And what's happening in America today is a direct repeat of what happened in Judea when Herod usurped the throne. And what we're seeing today, folks,
But I mean, that's pretty much a done deal in 1913.
Yes, right. The
Jews 1913,
have taken over our country just like they did then.
When they got the economic control of the country, they naturally obtained the political control.
Right.
It's the natural outcome of gaining the economic control.
Mm-hmm.
We put the unrighteous steward in charge of the house, and now we're getting looted and pillaged, and we're losing all our goods and our wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the natural result of putting the wolf in charge of the sheepfold.
Yes, yes. Well, World War II is a study in itself and how our race was betrayed by the communists and the Jews and the Zionists. There's simply no doubt about that. As a matter of fact, folks, let me just quickly announce that I think on the 16th, my guest is going to be Gary Condit, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about, okay? how America was betrayed by the Jews in World War II. That's going to be the subject of that discussion on August 16th. So very much looking forward to that. And so since Joel Mayer has kindly agreed to be my guest this Sunday, we're going to be talking about, I forget exactly what the subject was that we were talking about earlier, but again, how the Jews have been manipulating our people, no doubt about that. And I think vaccinations and that kind of thing is what we'll be talking about on Sunday. So now tomorrow we're going to be beginning our first in the series. Oh, it says the Lubeck experiment. Okay. Tomorrow we'll be beginning our first in the series on Corinthians, correct?
I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, very much so.
Tomorrow.
And then we've probably got a few more episodes of Two Seed Line in the New Testament. And then from there, on this series, on
well,
the Christian
we might be here for another dozen.
Yeah, okay.
I'm
because,
frank.
Yeah, I, for some reason, I'm just itching to get into Acts, you know.
Well,
but,
yeah, we'll get to Acts.
Yeah, we'll get
I,
to
I
it.
Mean, maybe by the end of the year.
Maybe by December. All right. Okay, folks. Oh, yes, and I was a guest with Rick Adams last Tuesday night, and believe me, folks, the call-ins were just absolutely tremendous. Everybody that called in just was supportive of Christian identity. People, you know, it's like we are finally starting to reach people, and people are beginning to understand. Number one, because I think most white Americans are feeling threatened by the establishment, and they're coming after us, folks. And they're beginning to realize that, and now they want explanations. They want understanding. And they're not getting understanding from anywhere else except the Christian Israel message, folks. We're the only ones telling them it like it is, all right? Okay, thank you, Bill, for being my guest again tonight, and this has been a whole lot of fun. Please let your friends and relatives know that our study here tonight about the wheat and the tares is the only one that makes sense. Okay, and their pastors, so-called, are not explaining them to them what these passages mean. And it's very simple once you understand the two-seed line message. Okay? All right, so thank you again, Bill, and I'll see you again tomorrow night.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. And good night, everybody. Yahweh bless everybody.